All right, Kelly Vigil, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be a blast. I'm so excited for you to be here. You are not new to podcasts. So you've been on Running Explained a couple times. You have been on with my good friend, Lindsay Hine, as well, and some other podcasts as well. So thank you so much for coming on. You're here not only in your coaching capacity, so you're someone who's been coaching for a long time, but also as a runner. And I can't wait to have this conversation because you are someone who does a great job of sharing all the highs and lows and the sticky points sometimes that can affect so many of us, but then oftentimes that we just don't want to share online, right? It's not that, you know, sometimes we hear, hey, social media or Instagram is a highlight reel. And I think that may be true for some people, but oftentimes people just don't want to share certain parts of their life. It's not that they want it to be a highlight reel. They just want to be more private about certain things, which is certainly understandable. But I think you do a great job of tackling some of these things head on and opening up dialogue around them. So I guess, first of all, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being part of the running community.
Thank you. That was a great opening. I feel like I'm too much of an open book sometimes, but definitely try and be relatable in social media just to keep it real.
Well, you do a really good job with it. And, you know, as someone, you know, on podcasts like this, we try to drill down and talk about things that can affect a lot of people and, you know, overcoming hurdles and the inner life that so many people have that oftentimes can either be what helps them or hurts them, or sometimes a little bit of both. But oftentimes I don't share those things about my own life on social media. So oftentimes when I read your posts, I see, you know, I find myself nodding along as someone who's like, yes, this is exactly what's going on with me, man, or something really similar. When you have those moments of like, and we'll talk about some of them in more specific terms shortly, but when you have those moments of deciding to share or not to share, you know, what's that like for you as someone who's been doing it for a long time, but at the same time, I can imagine it being, you know, a potential like sticking point for you.
Yeah. It's intimidating and a little bit overwhelming. You never know. You always feel alone, I guess, before you put it out into the world. Like whether it's just, you know, being a parent, having a bunch of kids stuff going on, you know, having like a bad running season where everything just feels really rough. You always kind of feel alone, but I have noticed every time I share something like that in the social media world, 99% of us are all dealing with very similar things, whether we're parents or not. You know, it's just, it always helps me feel a little bit better. So that's why I keep doing it.
And one of the things that you do well, and this is something that I struggle with and oftentimes has been a hurdle for me for sharing some of my experiences that are a little bit, you know, experiences that I haven't felt great about. Let me just put it that way, is that you do a great job of bringing them up in a way that's not like as if like you're complaining about it, right? Or like, oh man, here it is. Here it goes again. Another like, woe is me type situation, which again, can befall us all. And like, who hasn't right. had those thoughts? But you do a great job of, you know, being open and honest about things while not presenting them as like, oh, you know, again, that woe is me type voice. So when you're constructing, you know, what you're sharing online, and I guess the same thing goes for your email list and things like that, however you want to share with the people who are following along with your journey, how do you approach opening up while not making it in that kind of voice?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with I understand in myself when I'm writing it, it's kind of like a journal entry for me almost, where I may sound complaining a little bit or woe is me, but I feel like kind of writing it out and sharing it on social media is kind of like a, I don't know, breath of fresh air, where it's like you get to look at your words, I guess, a little bit better. Whereas if you're writing in a diary or a journal or something like that, and then you're like, okay, this is how life is sometimes, you know?
Yeah. And one of those things that I wanted to bring up was when you ran the JFK 50 last year, which is one of America's, well, I think it's like America's oldest 50-mile yes. race. It's super iconic out here on the East Coast. And it's an interesting race where the first you know, 8 miles or so is on the Appalachian Trail. It's very technical. And then it opens up and basically becomes like a, you know, 40-ish mile, like on a bike path race after that, right? So you have like yeah. some two extremes, right? But it's a legendary race. I know it for you has been a race that you've been thinking about for a long time. You ran your first 50K 3 years prior to that. You've been building up for it. And at the same time, the race didn't go the way you wanted. You end up, you know, didn't make the 27 hour. Was it 27 hour or 27 mile cutoff? 27 mile yeah. cutoff, right? which, you know, obviously wasn't what you'd hoped for.
Right.
So can you walk me through, again, I want to talk about the race, but I really want to focus here on how you handled the race, not only internally, but how you then handled it publicly, because I think that this is, for me, again, this is purely selfish reasons, something that I really struggle with. And I find it really hard, but at the same time, I think my lack of being able to do it well also means it like sits on my shoulders for a lot longer and nags at me for a lot longer because I don't process it the way I probably could. So can you walk me through, I guess, once the race ended for you, how you went about processing that race publicly and personally?
Yeah. Man, this is a tough one because it was a huge mental game for me running that race. And I knew that a lot of people were following along. So I'd been training for like 6+ months for this race at that point. And I knew I was ready for the mileage. I knew that it's the first 14 miles are on the Appalachian Trail. And I was like, as long as I make that cutoff, I'm going to be good. And I did make that cutoff. It was the next cutoff that I didn't make. So that also in itself was kind of like, you know, I wasn't going to make the first one, and then you end up not making the second one. I didn't share it right away. I kind of took a couple hours to process it, but I also knew that a lot of people on social media were tracking me. They were waiting for me, you know, not waiting. I don't want to sound, you know, like selfish if people are watching, but it was very much like I wanted people to know that I wasn't just like, I don't know, like walked off the course or something like that. So.
Yeah, but people were definitely rooting for you, right? You had like your friends or athletes that you coach or just people that you know from afar that were rooting for you and excited for you. So I totally get what you're saying.
So not that I felt like I had to update people, but it was definitely like I remember just posting the story. And it was really like one sentence on my Instagram story. It was like, didn't make the time cutoff at mile 27. Heartbroken, something like that. It was such like a simple Instagram post. And I got a flood of messages for the next 24 hours from that. And I really didn't say anything else after that because I was still dealing with, you know, just all of that that comes with it. But I feel like just posting that simple story was so refreshing because the messages that were coming in were so supportive and people were literally just sending like their love and sending hugs from wherever they were. And for the next 24 hours, I'm like reading through hundreds of messages on my Instagram. I'm like, okay, I know I'm not alone. I know I'm not the first person to DNF, especially in the ultra running community. And I feel like it's just not talked about enough. So that was kind of my motivation to keep the dialogue open about it was because I had felt so alone, like, wow, I'm, you know, running my first 50 and I'm the only one that DNF'd, when really that's not the case at all. A lot of us have been in similar situations, whether it's your 50 miler or whatever the distance is.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about after that, you know, say the week or so later or even past that point, right? You've been very open and honest about that experience. And even now, like you had a post and we'll talk about this, you know, some of the other things that you posted, I think it was like 2 weeks ago where I think it's a trend online. It was like one of those like social media trends where it's like, hey, share 5 things that people don't know about you or that you've been struggling with. And I think you did a great job and you shared some things that, you know, where it was obvious that you weren't just like, you know, kind of like humble bragging your way through the post, right? There's some people who be like, you get that experience, like it's almost like an interview question, right? Like, what's your worst quality? You're like, I'm a perfectionist. You're like, shut up. Yes. That's not a negative quality, right? So like, but you shared some really, you know, heartfelt, obviously things that were, you know, that were on the brain, had been on the brain for a while. Yeah. One of them was like, hey, kind of like the disappointment / like embarrassment of DNFing a race publicly, and that can be really tricky. Yeah. I did the Eugene Marathon, and there isn't a day that goes by. I ran that race 2 years ago. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about it. And it's like, you know, and for me, like, I still don't, you know, I still haven't done a great job of handling it. So after that initial surge of like, all right, I'm heartbroken, which is like, kudos to you, like, you wrote the truth, right? You didn't sugarcoat it. You're not like, hey, I tried my best and, you know, I live to fight another day. Right. It's like, that's not like that wouldn't have been true, but it's not like the truth of the moment for you. Right. actually you kind of leaned into it. So what's it been like after that fact, you know, as someone who not only is someone who shares their running in public, but also you're a coach.
Yeah.
And I think that that also can get tricky when we share our running that doesn't go good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about that, especially being a coach. I feel like people look to you as you know it more than, or know it all, or know more than they do, or can train better than they do. And in reality, that's not the case. We're all humans. And whether I know how to make a really good training plan and coach other runners doesn't mean that I'm also going to excel at everything that I'm doing. So that was a huge thing that I had to kind of, I'm still working through it. I mean, I, just like you said, it's 2 years later from your race. And I feel like a lot of people don't talk about the mindset of either, whether it's a DNF or not hitting a goal or even getting injured right before a goal race, really mentally taxing on people. I feel like a lot of people talk about the physical training aspect of it, of, oh, you know, what do I need to do, more hills? Do I need to train more miles or strength train more, you know, whatever it is. But no one talks about the actual mindset of going through what happened, why it happened, and also like, how do you not even get over it, but like get to a point where you're just in a better mindset over going after a goal again. That's what I've been really struggling with. And I think part of posting on Instagram specifically is, again, kind of like my way to prove to myself that I'm not alone. And I feel like just being really raw about it is what's helping, because I'm not trying to, you know, make it like the toxic positivity of like, I'm going to keep going after it and I'm going to do great. I mean, part of me is like that because, you know, you want to like keep going after goals and getting better and doing all that. But part of me is still very much struggling, you know, just from what happened.
All right. Speaking as a coach, when you have athletes that have gone through a similar type thing, right? Big goal race, doesn't go the way they wanted, and it's not like a near miss. Or even sometimes a near miss can be even more, this is an overdramatic word, but traumatizing than like than the far away miss, right? You get, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you feel like you're playing a team sport, you get blown out. You're like, well, that wasn't very close. You kind of move on to the next one, right? But you like, you lose at the buzzer, it's like, oh my God, we were so close. I don't know if we're gonna get that close again. Right, that kind of vibe, right? So I guess it doesn't matter the scope or the exact details of it not going in someone's way. But when you've had athletes, again, that have in similar circumstances, how have you advised them from a mindset perspective, not only in terms of getting over it, but how and when and some of the other factors of re-engaging to not only their day-to-day running, but also the goal setting process or striving for new achievements and things like that?
Yeah. I love this question because I always thought to myself, you know, if I was having huge stomach issues or I tripped and fell on the trail and got severely injured and those were the reasons why I wasn't finished, I feel like that's just more tangible, right? Like that's more, in my mind, when this happened was more acceptable, right? Like I had,
right, if you like sprained your ankle, you'd be like, oh, you know,
right,
it happens.
Yes.
Let's try it
or
again.
Like couldn't keep food down or something where it was more severe, where you're like, this is exactly the reason why I couldn't finish. But mine wasn't like that. It was so for lack of a better word, boring. I mean, I literally was like, I could run the mileage. I was just trucking along and literally I just got to the aid station and that was it. Like the time wasn't there. And I have had a few athletes that have dealt with something similar. And I feel like the biggest thing that I talk about with them is that there are no rules. And that sounds weird and kind of a little bit cliche, but in the running world, there really are no rules in terms of like us everyday runners. You know, like it's not like we have to run for our jobs. We don't have to run races to be paid. We literally do it because we love it, right? And we get some sort of joy and satisfaction out of it. And I feel like everyone's different. Like some people can go through that experience, take 2 weeks off and then go get them, right? They want to get right back in and go after the goal. And if that works for them, then that's great. And that's what they should do. But there are also people like me where I didn't run for 3 months. It was a very long time of me not running and not necessarily holding myself back, but just honestly wanting to do something different. You know, like maybe I should strength train more. So I'm going to go join a gym that I've never joined in my life and see how that works for me. So yeah, I think not necessarily like a training specific, but just the conversation of that there are no rules and it literally depends on who you are and, you know, your life, your own running story.
Yeah. And also the same person can have both of those experiences, right? There's sometimes where you know, where you have a perceived failure, I guess is how I'll say it. And then you want to get right back on the horse. And other times that same person can have the exact opposite response. Like, oh my God, that was too painful. I don't even want to think about this. I need to like disengage from this whole scene, right? This whole hobby. Again, not that I'm gone forever, but I need to, you know, me and running need to take a break. We're not breaking up, but we need to take a break.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like a lot of people don't give themselves the flexibility, I guess, or just like openness to do what they need to do, right? Like no one is making you go after these goals if you don't want to. And I think for me specifically, I had trained for so long for the JFK 50 that by the time, you know, that day where I didn't finish it, it was like, you know, some people were like, well, you could find another 50 miler a week or two from now and you'd still be trained and ready to go. And I'm like, I'm done. You know, like this was my end goal right now. And I didn't want to keep that kind of chugging along. I was already at the point of burnout pretty much just from training for that race. So again, it's very personal. I feel like people need, it's okay to accept that we're all on our own journeys and deal with it in different ways.
Right. And yeah. There gets a point, we can get to a point, and I certainly have, where it morphs from, okay, that sucked, but now you're just hiding, right?
Right.
Now you're just, it's the pain of the experience has been muted, and you just don't want to engage because you're hiding from it, or you just don't want to put yourself out there, you know, or some variant of that exact same family of adjectives. So when you've had either runners go through that part of it, or you yourself have kind of reached that stage in the evolutionary process, almost like the cycle of grief. You have like the stages of grief, right? Like say if you've reached that level or you've hit that point in your own life or your athletes' lives, how do you kind of get them engaged at that point? Because I think that's where I was for a while. And I had a hard time like recommitting and I kept like rationalizing it to myself, but it really was just fear, frankly.
Yes. Well, and it's hard to know the difference for a while. I mean, even just me, I've dealt with very similar things in terms of, you know, in the post, I think I talked about this where it's like, I've had the 50 miler goal in my head for so long now. And now I'm like, do I just not want it anymore? Or am I too scared and just not want to fail again? I don't know the answer to that question. I think it may just have to do with time. I'm not sure. Maybe I just need to be more patient for that to come with me. But I think as a coach, I do a lot of mindset work with my runners and a lot of it's just conversations around it. And I feel like a lot of it has to do with just what season of life they're in and how they're feeling about day-to-day running. You know, if it's really stressful for them to like get the miles in and everything like that, then they're not really going to be in a place to train for a goal race again. But I mean, if it's fear, a lot of that has to do with like your day-to-day life too.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it also can be, and this is one of the things where it can be hard to be a, like someone who coaches from afar. Right. Sometimes if you're having a face-to-face conversation, like it's what isn't said, or it's the body language, or it's the pauses where you could tell like they're trying to figure out what to say, right? Like you and I are looking at each other right now. Like you can see like there are times where I'm trying to say something, but I'm struggling with the words. So when someone's in that situation, like it's obvious, like, all right, there's maybe more to what they're saying right now than they've expressed. You know, in this case, it's just me being me and having trouble talking. But in other situations, like we've been describing, it can be like, hey, this person's trying to rationalize behavior, or they're not, haven't come to grips with how they're feeling, or they're just gun shy, right? And that can be a tricky situation as a coach trying to figure that out. Also, knowing when to push, right? Because it's not just about, you know, being the supportive person who is like, hey, this just might not be the right time for you. You don't need to put pressure on yourself. Like, we all have type A runners who are like, oftentimes we're just there to like walk them off the metaphorical ledge. But there are other times where it's like, no, like, hey, let's, I know you're not perfect right now. And it's, you're never going to have like the perfect set of training circumstances. Like the tumblers of the universe are not going to always align. Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that we can't go for goals. Right. And it's just like, hey, no, this is the time. Right. I think you're ready. Let's really step it up. Like, you say you want to do this. Well, then let's do it. As a coach, how have you navigated that process of knowing when to push and when to kind of be the supportive, you know, therapist of sorts?
Yeah. It's a fine line. And I feel like, I don't know, I try and be both, if that makes sense, at the same time, because as coaches, we are here to push and to make sure that you're happy with the end goal, whatever that may be. If that's a certain race or something, like whatever you're working towards, it's our, you know, jobs to make sure that you get there happy and healthy and, you know, all of that. And so I feel like pushing in general, in terms of like the workouts that I'm giving them. And then, I mean, this sounds so cheesy, but even just talking about like mindset wise, how that workout went for them. Did they feel really stressed out? Were they really overwhelmed? Or did it feel really good? Did it feel really freeing? And, you know, not everyone, like you said, or even goal is going to have everything be aligned and feel perfect. But I think we do know in our guts and in our stomachs when something is, you know, good to go after. And I feel like if they have that goal, talking through how that goal in general, like why they have that goal in the first place, but also talking through like what's holding them back, what has been holding them back in the past. What do they think anything will come up in the future? Even if it's just like, oh, I don't think I can do this in my day-to-day life because I have kids, a job, this. Even just talking through those, I can tell is super helpful for a lot of my runners. And I even have them write down. I mean, I'm like, if you have a journal, I know it sounds, you know, maybe not all of us want to have a journal, but even just writing those things down, it kind of feels like you're working through it, because we can't really just tell you, you know, like, you have this goal, I'm going to push you until you get there. You kind of have to be on board too.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is this middle ground too, right? Where like, you can not be striving for an A goal in the short term, while still setting yourself up for a success in the long term, right? Like, you can be someone who, like, say you max out at 50 miles a week, right? That doesn't mean that you have to be at zero if you're not striving for the A goal, right? You can be like, hey, you know, like, you can be like, all right, hey, let's just hang out at 30 to 40, right? We're just, you know, where this is manageable. This is, you know, 60 to 80% of your normal weekly mileage. Again, which doesn't mean that you're going to be like, you know, ready to you know, set a new PR in the marathon for that person. Right. But it also means that, like, once you make that decision to go do that or some other decision, that you're ready. So you don't have to feel like you have to pick up from square one, which I know for some people can get tough if they're kind of like the either all in or all out person, right? Yeah. The person who like can't have one bite of ice cream, right? They either have to abstain or they're eating the whole pint.
Yeah. Well, I feel like even on social media, that's something that I see a lot, is just so many extremes out there. Like, you're not a runner unless you run a marathon, or going from like 0 to 100 so fast. And I actually just made a post about this today, but I feel like a lot of us need to be okay with training where we're at. And that's mindset and physical wise, training wise. You know, obviously we want to push ourselves a little bit to keep growing and building and all of that. But there's a very fine line between, you know, if you look at your training plan on week 10 and you're starting from zero, you're not going to be at week 10. You know what I mean? It's just not there. And I feel like we kind of need to be okay with that for a little bit. And maybe it's not as exciting and, you know, fast paced, but I feel like that's just how it is.
Yeah. And one thing that touches on this idea really well, something that you also posted about recently, was that after your third child, your body didn't bounce back the way that you had anticipated and that it had after other pregnancies. And I always struggle with this topic on this podcast, because it's hard to, like, I have had women come on the show, and part of the reason they came on the show was to tell this story of, like, hey, going through childbirth, postpartum, bouncing back, getting back to fitness, and doing something amazing, no matter what that is. And I think that's an incredible story to tell. It's inspiring. Kudos to them for doing it. But at the same time, I've always worried about telling that story, not because it's inherently bad or there's anything negative about it. I don't think there's anything negative inherently about it. But the comparisons where if things aren't going well for somebody, that it can be like, oh, God, here's another story of people doing something that I'm not doing. Right. Great. Thanks, Matt. Right. And I had Kate Barrett come on the show. I think it was a year and a half ago, and to talk about this. Like, she was a former pro runner, ran for Wazelle, and she didn't bounce back from her pregnancy the way she expected to, and had a very different running life, you know, than she had before she had a child. And I feel like I always wonder about how to approach this. What's it been like for you as someone who, again, it's not like this was after your first child where, like, there was this stark demarcation, but you've had the bounce back that went well, and you've had the bounce back that for you didn't meet your expectations. How has that worked for you? And how has that been like for you sharing it with other women who may be going through something similar or who may be going through something similar in the future?
Yeah. I feel like we all should be sharing our own stories on this. I mean, everyone, not just women, but just in general of sharing the good and the bad in a lot of things, because, you know, like that social media post that we're talking about, is a lot of social media is a highlight reel. And you go on there and you're like, you know, my friend on Instagram had a baby, you know, 2 weeks after me, and she's already back to running, you know, her mileage that she was before. There are so many like body things out there. And I mean, I'm cheering them on. Like, I'm so happy for them because I know that we're all so unique in how our bodies get back to where we want them to be, and it takes longer for others and everything like that. But it is really hard, and that's part of the reason why I share my story, because I was not one of those people where it just clicked right away. And I, you know, had two kids, then a year later ran my first ultra marathon and felt amazing. So I'm like, oh, this is just what happens. And then I have my third kid, and it was, nope, it's going to take you longer to get to that point. And
you had two kids pretty close, right? You two kids, like, was like 20 months apart or something?
15 months apart.
15 months apart, yeah.
Yes. So I, you know, we had the two kids 15 months apart. A year later, I ran my first 50K. And then a year after that, I get pregnant with our third. And I'm like, oh, I already know this, right? This is my third kid. Everything's good. And it was just a completely different experience. And I don't want to say a bad experience at all, because I learned a lot of lessons. You know, like, I waited a little bit longer to start running again. I knew what my body needed a little bit more, but it has taken, I mean, I'm 3 years after having my third kid, my youngest just turned three, and I'm still nowhere near where I thought I would be, whether that's like body wise, training wise, strength wise, everything. So yeah, it's hard. But I want to put it out on social media because I know that I'm not alone. I mean, even just the runners that I coach, I know that we're all dealing with very similar things. And even the runners on social media that are posting about, you know, like high mileage and they're getting back to running so fast, a lot of them are also dealing with stuff that they're not sharing on social media too. So it's important to note that we're all, you know, sharing things that we want to.
What are your DMs like when you share about that? I always wonder, like, again, I would never expect you to, like, you know, to break someone's confidence on this or anything like that. But, like, I wonder, I can imagine this being a topic where people can really emote about, like, wow, this has been really hard, you know, especially if they, like, had gone through this before, like you, like, and it went pretty well, you know, all things considered. And then it didn't go great. Like, so you have this comparison point.
Yeah, I think most of the messages I get are just happy that I'm sharing it, because, again, I feel like there are so many extremes in social media, and people, it's kind of a breath of fresh air when you find someone that's like, okay, this is like relatable, right? Like, this is more my style, you know, like, I feel like, not that there's a lot of pressure, maybe there are, depending on who you follow, but I just feel like it's nice sometimes to be like, this is okay if this is also where you're at too. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, looking at social media, feeling behind. And I just hope that I'm helping spread the fact that it's okay to like be where you're at, wherever that is, whether that's, you know, better than you thought or worse than you thought.
Now, this doesn't relate as much to this part of the conversation. I think it can a little bit in a tangential way. It was something I wanted to bring up earlier. I finally remember the question I meant to ask earlier. People don't know this. I had to pause the podcast for a couple minutes. So I'm trying to think. And then I thought I remember the question. And I guess I had two questions in my mind because I finally remembered the other one. Earlier, you talked about like, hey, you know, like things can be scary to post online, right? And this can certainly be one of them. That's absolutely true. And I think at the time when this first came up, I was thinking more of the JFK 50 conversation, but it certainly pertains here. One thing that you mentioned to our friend Lindsay Hine when you did her show, I think it was January of 2020, was that you've always, and maybe I'm paraphrasing here, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, you've always viewed fear, right? Kind of like, you know, the JV version of fear, not like here comes an alligator kind of fear, right? You know, fear with a lowercase f, as like a positive sign of like, all right, I'm on the right track. Like this is, if I'm feeling this kind of way, it means that this is something that I probably should be doing or something along those lines. Now, this isn't a point that you and her explored for a long time. It wasn't the point of the podcast. But I'd love to touch on this in light of all the other things we've talked about. How do you approach fear now, if it's changed at all, and how do you talk about it with your athletes?
Yeah. Oh, this is a good question. And I distinctly remember that conversation with Lindsay talking about fear. I don't know if I brought it up then, but I think one of the main points that I think about in my life is when I was younger, before kids, before I got married, I am scared of heights. And I forced myself to go bungee jumping off the highest bungee jump bridge in South Africa while studying abroad. And I look back on that, I'm like, that was literally the time of my life. Like that experience was like top 10 experiences I've experienced in my life. And I'm like, I was so scared, my knees were buckling, and I still just forced myself to do it. And that's kind of how I approached running a lot more before kids. But even now, in terms of the 50 miler goal, like that scared the heck out of me. I even just putting in the miles to train for it and the time to train for it was scary, let alone the actual goal of running the race. And I think a lot of us have those scary goals and you just don't know how it's going to work until you're in it and you kind of figure it out. So a lot of the conversations I have with my athletes that I coach is really being present in the moment and knowing that like what you're feeling right now isn't going to be the same 2 weeks from now, 3 months from now when you're in peak week. And then, you know, you're going to feel completely different when you reach that start line in the race. I think it's important to note that because fear doesn't always feel the same just talking about running throughout the process. Like, I feel like it's really scary when you think of the goal, but once you start working towards the goal, it's not necessarily as scary anymore. You may fear some things about the race, but once you start really working toward it and have some action items to do, it feels a little bit better. And I feel like that's similar to our day-to-day lives as well. So that's what I try and do with my athletes and me specifically, is just try and make those like small goals within the training that makes it not so scary anymore.
Yeah. And beyond the physical fear, which you do a great job of painting that picture. And as someone who's scared of heights, I can't even imagine. The fact that you did that is just beyond shocking to me. There's no way I would even consider that. So kudos to you for doing it. But how about from the mental and, you know, emotional fear that can come from, you know, this? And by that, I mean kind of like the imposter syndrome, right? So like imposter syndrome can manifest itself in a lot of areas. But that's also a fear, a different kind. So how have you worked through that in the past or currently or things like that?
Yeah. And I don't think that the like mental fear, like fear of failure, fear of imposter syndrome, anything like that can really just like go away in an instant. So I want to preface it with that. I don't think that there's, I mean, if there is, that would be amazing, but I don't think there's anything that you can do like right this second that would just like take all your fear away, because it's there for a reason. And whether that's a good reason or a bad reason, you know, I feel like we have the feeling of fear for a reason, and it's normally been to like guide us through making the right decisions. And I feel like as long as we do our best to kind of like make it more tangible, it might feel a little bit better. For example, like if you have the fear of failure, I know a lot of coaches are like, well, just keep failing, right? Because the more you get used to it, the more you do it. And for me, I'm like,
it's like the Thomas Edison method, right? He's like, all right, like every way I don't, they say like he was trying to make the light bulb. He's trying to figure out which filament to use. And like, how do you feel about failure? He's like, I don't feel a failure. I feel like I'm one step closer to success. It's like, yes. That's great, buddy. But I'm talking about marathons. I only do 2 a year. I don't have like, I can't go through 15,000, you know, opportunities here.
Yeah. Yes, but I feel like we can kind of break it down in terms of like each run, each step in the run, like we're just one step closer to that. And again, I think putting into motion makes us feel a little bit better. But I also feel like the imposter syndrome, again, it's not going to go. I feel like we have to do our own work mentally to figure that out for ourselves. And again, that's not going to happen in a day. But I feel like if people use their training blocks, not just for the time on their feet and the mileage, but for the actual mindset work around what they're feeling about their running goal, or even what they're feeling that day on their run, it could really open up a whole new thing for them and really change their running game.
So you are someone who helps other people with their mindset and overcoming their fears, even if you can't abolish them, they're still there, right? Like the idea of like courage is not an absence of fear, it's feeling the fear and going anyway, right? So yeah. You are that person for other people. Who's that person for you who helps you work through your fears?
Oh, man. Well, everyone in my family, pretty much. My husband. And I feel like this is so weird, but I feel like my kids, too, just watching because they're so young, like they have almost no fear of anything right now. And honestly, it's kind of freeing to watch. I'm like, I need to do more of that. I need to be more carefree like they are. But yeah, I mean, I feel like even just in the running world, a lot of us can lean on each other because we all have very similar fears. Like we're not alone in a lot of what we're feeling. And I feel like if you have a really good running group or running friends, even online, I mean, you know, following people, like I've been following you for years online.
You told me that. I was like flabbergasted. You're like, I started following you in 2016. I'm like, oh my, I had like 10 followers. It's like, I can't even imagine the things that you saw in that account.
I feel like I've been, yeah, so back in the day when I started my running Instagram. But yeah, anyway, and I feel like a lot of coaches are that way. And I used to have a coach a couple years ago, Jess from Pace of Me, who's wonderful. And she would push me a little bit. And I feel like just having someone that's outside of your brain, literally like a bystander, can help you so much just getting you out there and talking through things and, yeah, putting your mind at ease.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because like sometimes with this sort of thing, and family and friends, obviously the support of family and friends can be vital in so many areas. But when it comes to overcoming fear, for me, that's never been like the soothing balm that it is for other areas of my life or other situations, right? Because it's kind of like, yeah, of course you would say that. Like, you're my family or friend. Right. Like, I could, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like when your spouse tells you like, oh, you're beautiful or whatever. You're like, yeah, but like, you know, you kind of have to say that. Right. Like, yeah. we both are wearing these rings. Right. Like, we're not going to say the opposite. So like, I kind of get that same. And maybe that's just like my own deeply held insecurities. I often push back against people who are in my life saying positive things to me and about me. Oftentimes, like for me, it's like finding motivation from other people who don't know who I am, right? So, you know, I think for some people, this could be like the David Goggins of the world, right? Or insert someone doing something cool and documenting it to some degree and be like, wow, look what they did. I wonder if I could do that, right? Or like, hey, they got through that crazy thing. I bet I can get through a crazy thing, right? So you almost can kind of like put yourself in their shoes. Do you ever have those people, moments or figures that are beyond just like your, you know, your family or friend circle?
Yeah, I think a point that I wanted to touch on too is look outside the running community as well, because my husband hates running, absolutely hates it, but I feel like it's almost,
he must really like the decor in your background. Like, I'm looking at like, it's all treadmills and marathon medals.
He has the garage gym. It's okay. But I feel like it's good because when I talk about running with him, it's from a very like third party perspective because he has not been through it. And I feel like that helps me kind of not get over a lot of things, but just knows from his point of view and his life experience that have nothing to do with running. It's really helpful to get that opinion. So just wanted to put that out there too. You can look outside the running world. Even the like blessing of social media, you can look at like, I mean, there's just been everything about Caitlin Clark recently about women's basketball and in the WNBA now, like look into those people that are on social media and like, they are also, I don't want to say 100% relatable because we are all obviously not to that standard, but
it's, I am Caitlin Clark. You are Caitlin Clark. We can all know.
Yes. But I just mean it in terms of like, look at the way that they're handling themselves and they're also struggling through some things too. So I feel like we, you know, look outside the running world and I feel like it might help and you can just relate it to what you're going through with your running goals and training.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing so much of this. I really appreciate it. As you know, we're now a couple months into 2024. And as you mentioned, like you did take a 3-month hiatus from running after the JFK 50. Where are you right now with your own goals and things that you're working through and you're excited about?
Yeah. So one of the lessons I learned from JFK 50 was to run more hills and to strength train more. And I've been doing both of those, which has been really helping me. So not training for anything specific right now, but I have been actually being consistent with my strength training, which is something that I've never done. It's a huge win for me to do that 2 to 3 times a week. And hill training too. So just putting in some of the small lessons I learned at JFK 50 and trying to figure out what I want to do for the fall. That's where I'm at now. No decisions.
Have they lured you back in? They have a very active social media presence. I see them in your like in your comments section all the time. They're committed to Kelly V. Hill.
They are. I'm not sure this year. I feel like I maybe need a year hiatus, but I mean, I bought a jacket that I, you know, can't wear until I finish the JFK 50. So I feel like I might be back.
That's how they lure you in. Yes. That is great.
Yeah.
Would you recommend that race? Again, this is purely selfish here, but it's like, as a fellow, you know, as an East Coaster, right? We don't have a lot of, we have plenty of trail races, right? I mean, there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of trail. There's plenty of, you know, forest out here. There's no question about that. But in terms of iconic trail races, the East Coast is not exactly the hotbed for that sort of thing. And JFK 50, it really is kind of like the central hallmark of what we have out here. So is this a race that you are a big fan of outside of like your own, I guess, outside of your experience? But like, obviously, while the race didn't go great for you, is this something you would recommend to other people?
Yeah. Yeah, the race in itself, it's like you said, is the oldest ultramarathon in America right now. And it started when JFK was president and he had like that athletic initiative of putting on more ultramarathons. So I just love the history behind it, number one. Number two, it is very supported, which is amazing for first timers. The Appalachian Trail portion is very
technical. That's what I
want to
talk about. I can understand 38 miles on a bike path. Talk to me about the 12 miles on the, or the 14 miles on the AT.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. It was way more elevation than I originally thought because, I mean, it's like all at once you do like the 3,000 feet of elevation and then you have to like make your way down. There's like no break in between, I guess is the best way to put it. Like you're literally just going up, 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 up. but once you get through that part, it is so well supported. All the atmosphere and environment was awesome. I loved it so much. And yeah, it's just a really fun time. So I'd highly recommend it. I want to go back.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess that's a great way of putting it, right? If you want to go back, that shows that there's a lot there to like, that's for sure. It does make you wonder if like, I should be doing, if I do sign up for that race, if I should like cross train on a stair stepper. It's just like, you know, 7 miles straight up.
Yes. All the hills. That's what I'd recommend.
You know, occasionally you'll see someone at the gym do like the stair stepper move where like they don't go all the way down, all the way up. They do like the quick feet stair stepper move. Again, which I was always kind of like, what is that? What is that person doing? When I put in the context of like, would this be good ultra trail running? You know, practice. I'm like this method, while maybe not what the stair stepper creator intended for the use of this piece of equipment. It might actually be good for this, for cross training for an ultra.
Yeah. We make it work. I'd recommend it.
I love it. Kelly, if someone wants to learn more about you, you know, your journey, your coaching stuff, all of that, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah. You guys can go on Instagram. I'm More Miles More Fun is my username. Like we've been talking about, I share a lot of my life on there, a lot of my running, along with my coaching stuff. Or you can go to my website, moremileswithkelly.com.
I love it. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Rambling Runner Podcast. Go check out ASICS, our presenting sponsor, at ASICS.com today. Also, are you in the market for a coach? I don't know if you know this, I am a coach. So I've been working with amateur runners for over 5 years now as part of McCurdy Trained, the biggest run coaching service in America. And I love doing it. It really is one of the highlights of my day. I love working with amateur athletes who are working to get better and balancing running with a crazy schedule or looking to get the most out of their running. They feel like you have potential, but you're just not sure what to do. That's exactly where I can step in. Also, for people who maybe need just someone to like be accountable to. That's a big one. That's one for me. That's why I like having a running coach, someone I can be accountable to. Also, a lot of athletes that I work with are kind of maybe on the type A end of the spectrum, and it's great for them to have a counterbalance. And I think that that's something that I can provide for them as someone who can allow them to just relax, enjoy their running, and not obsess over it. So if that is something that you're interested in, you can always email me at ramblingrunnerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can always shoot me a message on Instagram, rambling_runner. Thank you so much for listening, and happy running.